Nate Freeman and me, Benjamin Godsell. Nate, it's gray outside. It's cold. It's wet. We have not one, not two, not even three, but four former presidents of the United States on the island of Manhattan at the present moment. It's fucking impossible to get anywhere via subway or car. I don't have access to my own helicopter at present, so don't know about that. I think airspace is probably restricted. What's going on, my guy?
Are you going to Radio City Music Hall tonight to watch Lizzo perform for three presidents?
No, I'm not currently on opiates, so I don't think I can handle that. Why not? God bless. They're going to raise $50 million.
They're going to raise a lot of money, which is amazing. If this is what it takes to raise money for Biden, I'm all for it.
I don't know. Lizzo's the one that plays the flute, maybe?
Lizzo plays the flute.
Yeah. Not for me. If it was a small meet and greet, but to get a picture with all three presidents, 100K, cha-ching.
You know who's taking those pictures?
Annie Leibovitz. Of course. I mean, come on. There's only one possible answer to that. I didn't know until you asked, but
you were spot on, right
on. It ain't Ryan McGinley, and it ain't Patrick McMullen.
No, it's not. Speaking of some fancy pictures, I have in my hands the newest copy of Vanity Fair. I don't think it's even on newsstands yet, but I brought it from the office because I have a fun story in here about Swizz Beatz and Alicia Keys and their art collection, which is currently on view at the Brooklyn Museum. This is a cool picture. Come on, Benjamin.
It's a very cool picture.
It's all the artists in their collection in the show together, not photoshopped. I was there. They were all sitting there. It's really cool.
Was that picture taken in the museum or in a photography studio?
It was taken in the museum in the rotunda on, I think, the third floor. Ronell Medrano took the picture. Shout out, Ronell. Really amazing day. Shout out, Nicole, our sings editor.
And you've been to the museum and seen the show?
I walked through when I interviewed them.
Was it any good?
Yeah, the show's great. Some really amazing stuff in there.
I have not made it out to Brooklyn as of yet, but that doesn't mean I won't.
But I didn't bring the issue just to shout out my own story because that's a little lame, but there's also an amazing story.
But real quick, last night I had dinner at Locanda Verde.
Oh, Locanda.
I haven't been there in a minute. Great company.
Yeah.
It's a mid-restaurant, let's be honest.
It was hot when it opened.
Yeah, and it's still popping. It's so loud in there. It seems like 50% filled with young Citibank bankers from across the street.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that. A lot of fleece vests, so I felt really red at home. I didn't wear the fleecy last night. But I actually had it with this couple who are proprietors of the now international nightclub Silencio, and they were talking about their first opening in New York just before Fashion Week, where they hosted a bunch of events, were actually the party for that show.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he looked around, he's like, this is why we opened a club in New York.
Yeah, I have not yet been to the Silencio in New York. I am a fan of the one in Paris, of course, the OG Silencio.
Yeah, nor have I been to the one in New York, and it'll be a while until I'm invited.
You've been to the one in Paris, though, right?
Yeah. Have I been to the one in Paris, Nate Freeman? I've not been to the one. Do you know that they have a beach club in Ibiza?
I've not been to the one in Ibiza.
Nor have I, but they're saying it's pretty awesome. They live like a half of the year there.
Oh, my God.
Pretty cool couple. But anyway, you were saying you brought in the magazine. Is there any other art-related stories in there?
There is. My colleague Mark Seal has an amazing story on Inigo Philbrick. The first interview with Inigo since he disappeared from New York City in October 2019. It's a great read. It's really good.
It's a super compelling read. It has some great photographs in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was first drawn to it on the internet yesterday when it dropped. And it's an interesting story because it's like a lot of it's for those of us in the art game is like a retreading of kind of an accounting of his fraud. But the first person, he's the first person to ever speak on the record with Inigo and his baby mama, whose name escapes me, Victoria, maybe? That seems right.
She was the star of apparently quite a compelling reality show called Made in Chelsea.
Yeah, it is very compelling. Anyway, and so you have, you have counterposing Inigo giving his spin on the situation, then with the actual court documents about this massive fraud with this guy. Stole money. There's no other way to say it. He stole money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think for the general, is an incredible get to get him on the record. First, while he was in prison, and then since he's been on supervised release since the end of January. Was it common knowledge that he was out of jail since then?
I don't think
I was aware of that.
There was an item in the Daily Mail maybe a few days ago that indicated that he was out. I think it's public record if you know how to look it up. you know, you
can, I don't.
You can see if someone's been transferred out. Like, I remember when Mary Boone, for instance, got out, I, like, was tipped off, and I found the record that she was out of prison. So I think someone in the Daily Mail did find that out. But it wasn't common knowledge, of course, that he had been let out. I think a little bit early on good behavior.
So I'll let people read the story. I think, you know, it was, like, as I said, an incredible get. And I was extraordinarily touched, especially he posted for the first time in however many years on Instagram a picture of him with his young daughter, who I don't think he'd ever met. So as a dad, like, that got me, like, the human edge of that. Like, I felt, like, really touched by that.
Of course. I was as well.
And even right now, I'm feeling emotional. But that aside, given his own words, Inigo, he sounds a little bit fucking delusional. Like, he's kind of minimizing the crimes that he has been convicted and that he pled guilty of committing. Like, oh, I was, you know, the typical fraudster thing, almost like Sam Bankman-Fried tried to do in court yesterday or today at his sentencing. Like, oh, I would have made everyone whole. I was just like, kind of like any fraudster or any embezzler. Oh, I was just one deal away from getting this all sorted out. Mm-hmm. And he seems to allude, if you want to read the kicker out to the people, that he'll be back in the game, in the art game, in no time at all. What did he say, Nate?
He said, I'd like to get reestablished as an art dealer. And they said, that's going to require a lot of listening and discussing with friends, clients, colleagues. I've had some indications of interest from friends in helping me get started, but it's too early to say more. I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued, but I think that is completely cuckoo talk, my man. Like, no one, I mean, there are still people who he owes millions of dollars to.
This is true.
People that I know, that I'm friendly with, I would even call friends, and they're not happy to do business with him. They want their money, and they're upset still at the, oftentimes, abuse of their friendly relationship.
Sure, but he has to make back, what is it, some $86,672,790.
That's a lot of 10% commissions, my friend.
Yeah, so if he's going to do that while being an art dealer, you know?
I just don't think that's credible. Because the art market is so non-transparent and everything is done basically on a handshake, the only thing you have engaging in a deal is your word as bond and interpersonal trust, and he has zero of that at present. And I say this with no personal animosity. Like I said, the pictures of him with his daughter really touched me. I can't imagine anyone wanting to willfully engage with him as a counterparty, knowing the types of lies and fraud he's engaged in. And based on the tone of what he said, not just that quote, but a couple others, he doesn't really seem to have fully reckoned with the ill deeds that he did or take full ownership of them.
Yeah, maybe not. So we'll see. But, I mean, is he going to be, like, out and about, you know, at the fairs?
Really auctions? Interesting question. At the auctions, I don't know, man. That would be like a double take.
Yeah, it would be after all this time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope he's, like, in some serious therapy, because it's, like, a lot. Like, his whole identity was tied up with his work, and now that's gone. I can only imagine what it's like to, you know, try and walk out the door and at a relatively young age, I think in his mid to later 30s, to have to recreate yourself from scratch. So, as I said, on a human level, like, I'm super touched, but, like, I ain't doing a deal with him.
Another little tidbit in here is that there's going to be a documentary coming out, I think, this summer. So, we'll get to watch that. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, but that he's, like, producing Andor. Right, yes. So, like, I feel like that's going to be a certain, you know, that's not going to really an independent eye view on it.
Yeah, that's true. But still, compelling story. The documentary is called The Real Inigo Philbrick Story, A Tale of Fortune, Fame, and Fraud.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, do you have any kind of background that you can share about how this writer was able to get this access and build the relationship of trust that was necessary, or...
I don't really have more. I mean, he put it all in the story, basically. He, like, got an email from Inigo on the sort of internal server email that you're allowed to use in prison. I don't really know more than that, apart from I spoke with Mark a few times during the reporting just to sort of, you know, give him some background on, you know, Inigo and the art world and whatnot. Not that he needed it. Mark's an incredible reporter. But so I think, yeah, it's been in the works for over a year, though.
Well, from one fraud to another, a certain mega celebrity, Miss Kim Kardashian, and this is a convoluted story. I tried to explain it to a friend that's not in our world today, and I'm not sure if I did a good job. Let's see if I can do a better job for the listeners. She basically was showing off on an Instagram post her offices for Skims or Skin or whatever her multi-billion dollar company is.
Close enough. Yeah.
This huge open space, and was showing off the lunch area, kind of the kitchen where they have communal lunches, and was showing off her quote-unquote Donald Judd dining tables. Donald Judd, obviously the great minimalist artist, and who made some very cool furniture. Now, these are clearly not actual Donald Judd works. They're kind of based on the idea of what Donald Judd tables look like, which she was made aware of by the Judd Foundation.
Well, the real issue is, obviously this is not a Donald Judd artwork, but the foundation also produces furniture that Donald Judd designed during his lifetime, because he also made furniture. And she was heavily implying that this was Donald Judd furniture, which, you know, is sold through the foundation and is, you know, they don't make that much of it. It's, like, very expensive. I think a table is something like, you know, $50,000 or something. And so when she implied that this was Donald Judd furniture, the foundation was like, it's not. And it wasn't. It's made by some other company.
It was made by her interior designer, I believe. Mm-hmm. Tommy Clements, I think, is the name. Clements Design, him and his mom. And yeah, it's kind of a bad look, because it's not as good as Donald Judd. It's like
right.
kind of the same shape. Like it doesn't fit together as nicely. It's just like a little bit off. And I guess the Judd Estate or Foundation or both feels as though this degradates their brand by showing this as a Donald Judd piece when it's definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they reached out to her like, hey, can you just delete the post, like correct the record? And they were evidently, according to the lawsuit, which I did read, unwilling, they meaning the Kardashian people, unwilling to take it down or
wow.
do as such. And so they felt as though their only recourse was to sue. I don't know what to say. like at one level, it's like, who cares? But it's also hilarious.
It is.
And also, like, let's be honest, like, the Judd Estate's beneficiaries, like, don't really work. So I'm sure they're just really looking for a check out of this.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of fail sons and fail daughters out there in the world.
Right. But, you know, it's also important to correct the record. You know, like, you don't want, like, you know, mega celebrities with millions
no,
of
No, no, I
of
agree.
Followers.
On the facts, I agree. But I guess in general, recently, I've been annoyed by, well, I can't go there, actually. I realize it might implicate some people close to me, but
I mean, but, like, you know, any time that you know, a very Austrian minimalist artist foundation sues a Kardashian, like, we're here for it.
Yeah, but I mean, I also will say it seems a bit of like a tempest in a teapot, and, like, you know, a bunch of people that know nothing about Donald Judd or design or the mechanisms of that market just like to shit on Kim Kardashian because she's a self-made billionaire.
I'm a avowed Kardashian stan. I think people know that. Like, I am a fan of all branches of the family. Well, most branches of the family, I guess. And so, like, I don't want Kim to take an L, you know, but this one is kind of on her.
Yeah, should delete the post, man. Always delete the post. In fact, never post. Just never post.
Just never post, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's never a good idea.
I mean, they're like contractually obligated to post a lot of the times. But yes, generally,
yeah.
Never post.
Yeah, for most people, just don't post. So, and someone who's a fucking habitual poster and addicted to it. What else is going on in this world of art?
I went to a great opening dinner for the Ramekin Gallery last night at Lucien, which is quite lovely. A lot of familiar faces in attendance. What else has been going on? You have any other good meals besides Lokanda?
I feel like that's the only meal I remember. I've been taking the fasting very seriously. I mean, I made an incredible light and healthy dinner on Sunday that I was very proud of. But other than that, I mean, kind of in sad news, like, one of the great, you know, speaking of minimalism and postmodernism, one of the great sculptors of our age, Richard Serra, passed away. I think was announced to the public on Sunday. He was in his home in Orient, so he stayed at home until the end. Really kind of feels like a monumental loss.
Yeah.
And speaking about posting, everyone had to post a picture of the Sarah that they saw.
Right, the Sarah that they saw at Storm King or whatever.
Yeah, or for some people, the Sarah that they grew up with in their backyard in Connecticut.
That also applies, Benjamin.
That was the greatest one. I love that. No, that was the only. That was the. By the way, that was the only one that was okay.
Yeah, but, you know, a titan of American art, and, you know, I think one of the more prominent and important artists of the last 60 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, the other posting that was okay, actually I will say this, was Helen Martin posting like this great picture of Bryce and yes. Sarah together, who had been great friends and
it
contemporaries.
Was an Avon picture, I think.
Yeah, or was it? I didn't clock that. That felt really resonant. You, this whole generation of the that great era of artists, you know, kind of coming to the end stage of their life, really feels like a unique and deep loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the great thing about Sarah is like sometimes you'd roll through Chelsea like during a before an install at, you know, one of his galleries at the time, I think it was Gagosian, and you'd see like a truck parked there with the massive piece of a Sarah just like parked on the street overnight, and it was like, I don't know, it's like, it's one of those like, that's why we live in New York, baby.
Exactly.
Moments.
They had to come in on like an enormous freight ship.
No, they would like shut down the bridges, you know, you can only carry one of those over at once. I mean, the logistics, the monumentality of the logistics, never mind the art entailed in bringing and moving and setting those sculptures up, was just like out of control.
I also enjoyed, you know, the artists that kind of like went out of their way to like make a comment or post something. Robert Longo, who I don't associate with Richard Serra at all, said that he was a mentor to him. And, you know, obviously Matthew Barney, another artist, doesn't have much to do directly with Serra, but he cast him in one of the Cream Master cycles.
Yep, yep.
You know, he had a really lovely statement. So it's just, you know, he's just been such a force over the last decades.
I mean, some of them, I mean, I'm thinking this out loud, so it may or may not be true, but like, you know, for the past 25 to 30 years, we lived in an era that's kind of post the great man artist, not just man, but the great person artist, where it's all about the person's hand making things in them as sort of a larger than life figure in addition to their work. And he was really one of the last of those. And I think of, you know, Barney's kind of in that same thing where it's like, you know, this is my vision and I'm going to move through hell or high water and like, you know, just literally shut down bridges so that my vision can be realized. So I think that's kind of like a real sea change and the loss of that generation.
Absolutely. Maybe this is because I'm once again on my way to a reservation at the Odeon right after this. But he had a bit of a tempestuous relationship with that restaurant, if you recall.
Indeed. Indeed.
There was one time, I wish I knew the date, but it was when Keith was still involved, and Keith and his brother Brian were running it, and basically one of them would kick Sarah out, and then the other one would let him back in.
It seemed like he was 86th under different ownership structures at least four times based on my count.
There was one time that he like got in a fight with an actor who was getting dinner with Irving Blum and got kicked out. And then the next day, Philip Glass came to the Odeon to sort of argue on behalf of Sarah. And Sarah was standing outside the restaurant.
Across the street, I think. Yeah.
Across the street. And Philip Glass was like, come on, just let the guy in, look at him. He's just standing there. And they were like, fine, you can come in, Richard Serra.
Yeah, what a consummate New Yorker, too. Yeah, and a big amazing sports fan, from what I understand.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's what I hear. I've heard some great off-the-record stories about people that even in junior roles had experience with him working at galleries. And he was a pretty entertaining man of the people, it seems like.
Yeah, for sure. And I heard that even when his health declined a bit in the last few years, he would still get delivery from the Odeon to the studio on Duane Street, which is pretty touching to me, at least.
Are you going to eat it? Are you going to have some French fries with your martini tonight?
I might have the New York Happy Meal, you know, martini and French fries, but I'm actually going to dinner tonight to celebrate my friend Sam Jablon's show in Chelsea at Morgan Presents. So that'll be fun.
Okay. So it's a pre-opening teeny.
Yeah, just catching up with
now,
the colleague.
You're at the Odeon a lot. Are you like locked in with like the maitre d's there now? It's like, hey, what's up? How you doing? Like, are you like full regular?
Oh, yeah. I get like the hellos, the head nods. How's you doing? How's everything at the magazine? You know, they want to know what's going on.
They probably know more than you do about what's going on at that magazine.
Seriously.
Bro.
Yeah, probably.
And that's always speaking highly of them, not denigrating you, by the way.
No, I fully understand. No, it's just like kind of the go-to place. It's so close to the office, you know. Usually I'm walking from the office to the Odeon. Now I have to go back fucking down there. I was just at the office, but it's fine.
Now, of course, while we're here, we do have a number of friends that are across the globe and a full, you know, half day ahead of us in Hong Kong. I believe today was the first kind of public day of the fair after two VIP days.
Relatively stories reporting their sales, and there were a lot of sales in the seven figures. I don't know if there are any in the eight figures, maybe a $9 million sale, something close.
Yeah, it seems like at the high end, there were some decent things moving. Mm-hmm. Generally, the beginning of that sales process has kind of happened in advance of the fair at that level. So I heard, so I think it was maybe a tale of two cities. I heard from a couple of galleries, younger galleries that aren't selling seven-figure things, American galleries, how it was going, and I did not have a really positive reply back.
Right.
I heard dire was one word.
Oh, dire. Okay. I think that the reporting on the ground indicated that things were definitely slower than in past years because, you know, the economy in China, I think, is a little slow at the moment. But still, at the same time, to see, you know, great artists selling primary work.
The economy's not just slow in China. It feels like there might be a generational change. Now, a whole bunch of corporate titans are actually over in mainland China with the premier, Xi, right now. And he's pushing back against that narrative. But based upon the real estate bubble that dissipated and the lack of everyday people having really any other means to invest their money, and they're all overinvested in real estate, which isn't worth what they thought it was, and the lack of any true social security net, social safety net, things are not great, and that mm-hmm. could last for a while. Counter-narratively, I reached out to some friends that, you know, keep more close tabs on the macroeconomic environment, and they feel as though there might have been a turn there just because certain commodity prices are currently up, including copper and oil, which might be related to increased economic activity in China. But a lot of people are thinking that there's a real significant downturn that isn't is more than a single year sort of story.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just had to interject there.
No, of course. I don't really know what this bodes necessarily for fairs in the art market. But like, it's a far cry from, you know, a few years ago when you know, Levy Gorvy sold a De Kooning for $35 million, you know.
The market's in a really confused space right now. And I think it's the fact of the matter is there's multiple markets happening simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the mid-season auctions and the auctions in London over the past 4 to 6 weeks didn't perform very well at all. Felt like a lot of blood in the water. But at the same time, over the past several months, I've been feeling more active interest from general art buyers on the primary level. So there's a discordance there, and I'm not totally, I don't have an answer to it,
mm-hmm.
But it's certainly unsettled, and there is certainly a narrative somewhat that's been propagated by the press recently that, like, you know, that the some sort of free fall in the market. I don't think that's true. I just think maybe some people have only been paying attention for the past 5 to 10 years of positive results and have been ignoring the negative results that are always happening in day sales and mid-season auctions,
mm-hmm.
Because that fit the narrative that they were trying to, you know, that for whatever reason they were writing about. Whereas now they're kind of looking for the negative ramifications. If you go back to day sales historically, there's always people that aren't selling that were hot a year and a half, two, three right. years ago. It's the way, unfortunately, the exponential speed of how the market works these days, people get kind of really chewed up and spit out. I mean, look back at zombie formalism and all these kind of little micro movements and market moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a little bit too much focus on that and feeling as though it's different, where it's actually a little bit of the same. But there's definitely some unsettlement. But, you know, again, people are really tend to be looking all at the same artists. And so there's hyper focus and heat on some, and everyone else is kind of icy cold. And I think that was probably true over at the convention center in Hong Kong as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah. Well, we've got fairs in Dallas and Chicago coming up. Are you going to either?
Nate, I'm not. I got a bunch of travel coming up. I should be going to Dallas. I'm actually really interested. The Invitational looks really cool. The previews I'm seeing and the Dallas Art Fair. And obviously, I have a lot of business in Dallas, but because, as you know, then I'm headed to Europe for like 3.5, close to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Just didn't make sense to hit up either. In Chicago, we hit last year. I'm going to give it a couple years under free stewardship until I revisit it, probably.
I'm going to go to Chicago. I'm doing a talk with Chance the Rapper.
And woohoo!
I think it will be very well attended. And I just love Chicago, obviously. So I'm looking forward to that. You'll hear all about it. What else is going on? Are you?
Well, you know, there's a big eclipse coming up. Are you excited for that?
Can you like explain the eclipse to me? Like,
no, Nate, I can't explain the eclipse, but a listener, wrote in to me on my work email asking if we could talk about the eclipse and its effect on the art world. And I got no answers there, but I wanted to be responsive to our listeners. We love them.
Yeah, we love the feedback, and we're here to give you some Eclipse but content.
I have been at dinner parties over the past, I don't know, a couple of weeks, and on some text threads, people are like, oh, you're going to like Buffalo or Texas? And I'm like, no, because I guess those are the best places to see the eclipse.
But what is it? What is like literally going to happen? Can you explain it to me, like as if I'm like a child? Like,
yeah, the sun go bye bye.
Oh, is that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Is it going to be like dark?
It's like twilighty, I believe.
Okay. Will shit look cool?
Yeah, probably. Okay. It'll be trippy. It'll be trippy for sure.
So, all right, this is what, Monday?
Listen, if we're living in, you know, in primal times, we didn't have an understanding of how the solar system works, it would be a really big event. We might think the world was ending, in fact. Right. We'd be burning witches, you know?
That's a good point. And if we didn't have, like, you know, TVs in our pockets, like, that we could watch whenever we wanted to, maybe we'd be entertained by it?
For sure. I would still be entertained, but I'm not going to go to Buffalo for it.
No. Okay. So the sun goes bye-bye.
Sun goes bye-bye. Or it's the moon. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's solar eclipse.
Well, the effect on the art market. Let's ponder this for a second.
Well, we'll hold. I think Olaf Eliasson has some things in the works.
Yeah, that guy's got some shit cooking about this eclipse. I mean, the guy loves an eclipse.
But that does bring up, before we get to the rest of the art news, and a couple more little stories. You know, someone brought this up to me recently on our, I guess there's some sort of Q&A you can do, or maybe it's an Instagram DM. We want to reach out to you listeners to find out if any of you have any questions about the art world. Maybe about etiquette as it relates. We get a lot of big international events coming up, fancy dinners, cocktail parties in Venice, Basel, or as you say, Chicago and Dallas. And we know that some of you listeners might be going to big events for your first time. You might have questions what to wear, how to act, what to do, or even just any other general questions about etiquette specifically, I think, in the art world. We're here for you. So you can write in to probably my DMs are the easiest on the Instagram, or Nate's.
Sure.
And ask any questions, and we'll endeavor to do our best to answer a couple each week here on the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan, a sort of mini mail bag section of the pod. I'm all for it. Send the questions our way.
Yeah, someone mentioned this like a few months ago. I was like, oh yeah, we should do that. And then of course we, you know,
just forget. I mean, yeah,
there's a lot going on. We're busy guys.
Yeah,
we're doing this out of our love for you, the listeners. So you know.
Yeah, and speaking of how busy we are, what else is happening this weekend? It's Easter weekend. I'm going upstate.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of Barry's. I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah, Easter isn't really my bag. The kids are excited.
That's good.
But it's not really my holiday.
No, I totally
you know, my Polish mother-in-law, Polish-American mother-in-law, always makes kielbasa. I like a kielbasa.
That's a nice little Easter supper.
I guess that
Easter
was something
supper
from her childhood. I don't know if that's a cultural thing or just a her thing, but I always
love
like
it.
That.
Oh, well, that's just wonderful. That's
I've never said no to a jelly bean.
A jelly bean?
Yeah. Aren't jelly beans an Easter thing?
I don't know. The peeps are a thing.
Those are disgusting.
Yeah, those are really gross.
Yeah, that's not cool. I guess we should mention, I mean, I didn't read that much about this, but also the Broad Museum, which I went to the opening of 8 or 9 years ago,
You, can you tell me a little bit about the opening? Because I wasn't there. What was the scene like?
It was one of the fancier things I ever went to. I was there in the service with my then colleague of one of the more prominent collecting families in America based in Miami. And so we had chosen to go out there all together. They had been invited to the opening, this big opening and dinner. And I was just kind of tooling around to see the galleries. I think we did some studio visits with friends of ours, actually, all together while we were there. And being the type of forward people that these collectors were, when they found out that I'd flown out just to kind of hang out with them but wasn't planning on attending this gala opening and dinner, they put their foot down, called the powers that be, and insisted they bring... They basically just dragged me with them and like ran me through the VIP line at the front and then to the dinner. It was amazing.
Wow.
But I didn't bring a tuxedo with me because it was a black tie event and I wasn't planning on attending. So I had to go and like rent a tuxedo with like plastic shoes.
Wow.
In Hollywood.
Amazing. And I think I've been to that place in Hollywood and rented a tux.
And weirdly enough, there's a picture somewhere of me at the internet at the opening. One of the best pictures of me pre weight loss on the like around. I looked great. I looked
wonderful.
Absolutely great.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And by the way, so that's about me. So not to be me centered, it was the most spectacular art world event. Everyone was there.
Wow.
Like every museum director you can imagine from Europe and the US, every major artist, curators, tons of other big, you know, massive collectors, and a few shady art dealer types as well. Super fancy, super fun, super touching. But it's a really big building. I've been back a few times since. They rehang it on the regular, but it seems like they're expanding like in a huge way.
Yeah, I think it's like $100 million expansion. There's going to be 70% more gallery space. There's going to be a rooftop that you can go and chill on, which lovely in Los Angeles.
It's just so, you know, obviously the Broad is a fantastic collection, and and the family in general has been so philanthropic to other institutions in LA. But it's so hard when you have LACMA, you know, kind of fighting for, you know, for money to finish their building and expand the collection. You have MoCA that's always like one director shuffle away from absolute financial ruin, that so much capital is being focused on this private foundation as opposed to the existing public institutions in LA. It's, you know, it says something about Los Angeles and maybe our present moment of donor-driven philanthropy.
This is true, but, you know, at the same time, when you're at the Broad, one of the things that the building does is that you can look down into the storage and just like peer upon all of the works that are not on view. And of course, I'm sure there's external storage as well. And just to be able to put those works on view is pretty great. You know?
I don't have a real problem with it, but I just think it tells us something about America in this year of 2024. All right, that's all I have from you. Now, next week, are you in Chicago? Is that Chicago next week?
Next week I'm in New York.
Okay, so we'll probably do one more podcast before we embark on our travels then.
I would hope so.
It's busy times, man. I get this draft email. It's been sitting on my desk for 3 days now. I really just gotta write this thing. Right. I have an Excel spreadsheet. It's something from my accountant I don't understand, but evidently I need to do it so that I can find out what obnoxious amount of money I owe to Uncle Sam. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get things to do, man. You have martinis to drink and stories to write.
That's true.
But we will try for next week. And until then, I'll let you get out of here so you can make your reservation. Nota bene.
Out.